Whether you drive a car, need a car, or just occasionally bum a ride with friends, you've come to the right place.
Join the editors of Consumer Guide Automotive as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews.
Shopping tips.
Driving green.
Electric cars.
Classic cars.
And plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Here's your host, Tom Appel.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Glad you can join us today. When you have a chance, please check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, check out our 2021 Best Buy Picks. This list is an excellent starting place if you are looking for a new car or crossover. You also want to check out our blog for in-depth reviews of all the vehicles we're driving here at Consumer Guide and all sorts of other fun stuff. And if you have missed an episode or two of the podcast, I know you're upset about that. You can stream shows right there on our homepage. If you'd like to be added to the Car Stuff Podcast mailing list, drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com. That is carstuff@consumerguide.com. All right, let's see who is online with us today. She is the managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, and her freelance work can be found all over the internet. She's Jill Simonillo. Hey, Jill.
Hello.
How are you?
I am doing very well today.
You've been moving around a lot lately. Are you in Chicago or Florida today?
Today I'm in Chicago, although I will say by this evening I will be in Florida.
To my point, you move around a lot.
Yes, and I will say I have had like 10 COVID tests in like the last 2 weeks, all of which have been negative. And I would like to say I prefer the mouth swabs to the nose, brain touch.
Brain ticklers?
Yeah. I'm gonna say that. But no, every time I come back from a hotspot, I go get COVID tested so that I make sure that I'm in the clear.
If there's any reason to make sure that this pandemic goes away, it's the nose swab test.
Oh yeah, I feel like I sneeze. Like I'm like, oh, I'm like getting ready to sneeze, and they're like, that means you're doing it right, and I'm like, that is the most unpleasant feeling ever.
Also, I'm pretty sure they only hire people with anger management issues to perform that test.
Maybe. I was going to say they hire people with anger management to give out the vaccines. I still have a bruise from my shot 2 weeks ago on my arm. So, yeah.
All right. He is the senior editor here at Consumer Guide Automotive, and his new line of Waxy Damon auto-themed man candles can now be ordered at waxydamon.pl. Welcome to the show, Damon Bell.
I don't think you should Google man candles. That seems dangerous.
No. You Google Waxy Damon.
Now I'm tempted. Man candles.
Are these scented candles like the Yankee Candle Company?
Yeah, they're auto-themed man candles.
Okay, so what are some of these scents? Are they auto-themed scents, aromas?
Damon, I'm glad you asked.
He did his homework this time. Well, he does his homework every time, but yes, go ahead, Tom.
Well, you've got four. You've got four candles.
I've got four, okay.
Yeah. New
and
car.
And the scent, new car smell, of course.
Yeah, Nova Running Rich.
Okay.
Which may be a safety hazard.
Ford Is it a specific S1 model year, Nova?
No.
Okay.
It doesn't say on your candle. I don't know.
Okay.
Ford F-150.
Ooh, okay. So a specific scent of F-150.
Yeah, I think every Ford pickup you get into has a very specific smell.
Hmm.
Very okay. Recognizable. Okay. And finally, windshield washer fluid.
Okay. Which is known far and wide as a delightful smell. That windshield washer.
You know, you say that mockingly, but on a hot day, if you ever washed your windows on the car, on a hot day with your windows down and you get that kind of alcohol-y spritz on the windshield.
You enjoy that.
It's not unpleasant.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if it's candle worthy, but not unpleasant. I'll go along with that.
I was once described on a first date as not unpleasant.
Not unpleasant?
Yeah.
Did you go to the second one?
No, there wasn't a second one.
Oh, okay.
So I have an idea for a future candle scent then for you.
Okay.
Napa leather.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, you know. It's not funny, but it's a good idea.
I'm sure you could make it funny somehow. I just don't know how.
All right. Our guest today is Cars.com Editor-in-Chief Jennifer Newman. A new Cars.com survey details how car buyer behavior has changed during the pandemic. You do not want to miss this conversation. And Damon, why don't we ever commission big research projects here at Consumer Guide?
That's a good question.
We'll have to look into that.
Let's start with a candle scent research.
Ooh.
We gotta tackle the important topics of the day.
I just figured out why we don't commission big research projects. Oh, man. On that note, Damon.
Yes.
Lots of news in the auto industry lately, and some sales data came out. And I don't know if people know this because it's very inside baseball, but car sales now are reported quarterly. This is because some manufacturers, including General Motors, have decided not to issue monthly numbers anymore. That's all very inside baseball. But the big news is that organizations like Automotive News have finally gone through the first quarter sales results, and there's some big numbers for EVs that are very exciting. But not only that, there are some new EVs coming out that we know about. Talk about that.
Yeah, lots of EV news as of late. Kind of at the top of the list, Chevrolet has officially confirmed that they are building a pure electric version of the full-size Silverado pickup truck.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, we talked about the GMC Hummer EV pickup truck a couple months back, and now GM has unveiled the SUV version of that, which, as you would expect, looks pretty much just like that electric Hummer pickup truck, but this is an SUV.
And this Hummer brand is interesting. Hummer is now a division of GMC. And GMC right. already has a luxury sub-brand, that's Denali. But Hummer, which is an electric sub-brand, is also very much a luxury brand in that the pricing for these vehicles, at least initially, will be over six figures.
The top-line versions, yes. It seems to be automaker practice now to launch first with the fully deluxe version. The information that has been released on this Hummer SUV, the new one, it's not coming out until they say early 2023. So at some level, it sort of feels like they're jumping the gun a little bit, coming out with all this information and full pictures and even pricing this early. But that is what it is. There is full pricing. The cheapest version starts at just under $80,000. And the Edition 1, which is their fully decked out launch version, that's $105,595.
Now, all three of these vehicles, the two Hummers and the Chevy Silverado, we'll be riding on General Motors' new Ultium architecture. And this is the architecture. There's going to be different versions of this, but in this case, this is the same architecture for these three vehicles. And Damon, you would call the Silverado a version of the Chevy Silverado, but in fact, this is a completely separate vehicle. It is a dedicated electric vehicle. It will not share any architecture or frame components with the existing Silverado. But we seem to know that they're going to call it Silverado, which was a big question for a while.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, George, you had a question.
Well, you guys pretty much jumped into where I wanted to go. I mean, my curiosity with the electric, so I'm bringing up something completely different, but my curiosity with the electric Hummer is, you guys have been around in the industry for a while, so you remember the H3. And I started doing a chart because I was just curious about the comparison between the EV SUV and then the old, like, 2009, 2010 Hummer H2. And, you know, pricing-wise, it's about $10,000 off, so the price isn't that different. But when you look at some of the specs, what they've done with this new EV is they've made it bigger, they've made it, you know, faster, they've made it, you know, more horsepower. And so I don't know, I find it interesting, and I'm going to be very curious to see what the market is. You know, I was talking about this last night on you know, with the pickup truck talk, guys. And, you know, with the top-end version, you know, what is the market for that? They say that the top-end versions of the Edition 1 has already been sold out, but is that like five? You know, and, yeah. You know, this could potentially be a segue into the sales conversation, because automakers are pretty cagey about the numbers of these vehicles that they have available and that they are selling.
Yeah, it's the thought that I had in reading over the information about this new Hummer SUV, and Jill, you mentioned the H2. The Hummer brand basically petered out or was dropped by GM after the, you know, financial collapse and the bankruptcy of 2008. So, you know, at the time that the Hummer brand was discontinued, would you ever have, if I would have come to you then and said, you know what, in a little over a decade, there will be a pure electric Hummer that has a driving range of up to 300 miles, will have up to, what is it, like the top versions has the, like the equivalent of 800 horsepower, 830 horsepower, and some amazing torque rating. Would you ever have imagined that was going to happen from the perspective of a little over a decade ago?
No, no, and the irony is delightful. If you're General Motors, you're still a little bit
shamed
about having produced a 10-mile-per-hour vehicle at a time when gas prices rose to $4.50 a gallon.
Yeah, 10 mile per gallon.
Yeah, during your bankruptcy. I mean, it was all just so humiliating. And the Hummer brand should be dead. And I remember they couldn't sell the brand to the Chinese. So that's,
oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
That is how tarnished Hummer was at the time. So to come back now, to wheel this name and to make a vehicle that is actually more bodacious and outrageous than the original and have it consume no gas, to actually be able to suggest that this thing is green, it's got to be a wonderful bit of comeback for them.
Yeah, and just there's a little bit of forward looking projection here, but clearly they wouldn't be coming out there with these kind of claims if the technology wasn't there for them to actually do it. And it's astonishing that EVs have come that far in such a relatively short span of time.
And speaking of EVs coming far, we talked about first quarter sales numbers. Electric vehicle sales have jumped about 40% this first quarter over last year, which is a huge bit of news, because I think that we're finally talking about those, about EVs, and I think people are starting to accept them not just as inevitable, but as things that they could and might want to buy. And things like the Mustang Mach-E, which sold pretty well in the first quarter, that's kind of its launch quarter, so it's hard to put meaning on those numbers. But I think that's the kind of normalization, the kind of car next door vehicle that people are going to be looking at. But I think you guys saw these sales numbers too. The Mach-E is up, the BMW i3, which is discontinued, is up. Nissan Leaf is way up. Finally, the Audi e-tron. Audi's been having a hard time getting rid of that. The Porsche Taycan, I don't know how many of those they make, but that's selling well per Porsche. And the Volkswagen ID4, that's Volkswagen's compact electric vehicle, is finally coming online.
Yeah. I take those that percentage jump with a bit of a grain of salt, because we're talking about fairly small numbers to start with.
We
but
are.
Nevertheless, a 40% jump is significant regardless of the numbers you're talking about, and it's an indicator that things are definitely moving in a positive direction for EVs. But we probably mentioned that even with that jump, the percentage of EVs, pure EVs compared to the total new vehicle market comprise about 2% of that at this point. But that's a number that we'll certainly see continue to rise as we move into the future.
Go ahead, Jill.
I was going to say the other thing with the sales numbers, I think that you have to think about too, because quarter one last year was when the pandemic began. And so I just have to wonder how much of the EV sales are pandemic related too, like the jump, because like people were in fear at the very beginning and lockdowns, you know, especially in March. and which is the end of the quarter. And now I think we're starting to see the world opening up again, and people are starting to spend money.
Sure.
So, my question is, how much of this is, ooh, EVs are a thing, and how much of this is, ooh, I'm going to be able to spend money again?
Both. I think you're right. I think that's both. One little factoid. We're out of time here, but just an interesting factoid. Tesla sales are up about 10% over the same quarter last year, but its market share is down about 20%. That's a great number because it indicates that it's not just Tesla buyers anymore. Tesla is still selling more vehicles, but other vehicles are coming in line and people are looking at those. So, yeah, there's not enough data here to make any broad conclusions, but it seems like good news if you believe that electric cars are the future. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Jennifer Newman of Cars.com. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for sticking around. Hey, this is the part of the show when I strongly suggest you give me a follow on Twitter. I am Car Guy Tom. That is car_guy_Tom on Twitter. If you spot a cool, old, rare, or strange car on the road, post it on Twitter. Use the CarSpotter hashtag, and I will share that with my followers. All right. Our guest today is the editor-in-chief of Cars.com. She's also a certified car passenger safety technician, and most impressively, she has taught one of her kids to drive stick. Welcome to the podcast, Jennifer Newman.
Thank you. And survived teaching my child to drive stick.
Did the car survive, though? That would be the question.
Yeah. I'm happy to report the car and the clutch survived as well. So, but that was a really great experience. There's definitely a lot of stress to teaching your child to drive. And, but I will say that my 18-year-old did a great job of learning and had a good attitude about it. So it went pretty well. We filmed it, which is crazy.
That's right.
A lot of pressure,
right.
And he rolled with it beautifully.
Yeah, we'll post up a link to the video because it's if you want to hear lots of footage, if you want to see lots of footage of Jenny laughing, you'll watch this video.
Now, I taught my daughter to drive stick on the family 2011 Jetta TDI wagon. And if I'm not invited to my daughter's wedding, it's because I tried to teach her to drive stick.
Oh, man.
And you didn't, Tom, you didn't tape yours, did you?
No, I didn't do that. It was laced with profanity. And ultimately... If you ask her now, she'll tell you she can drive stick, and she never wants to do it again.
Okay.
Oh, interesting. So it was stressful. She found it to be stressful.
Yeah, and the Jetta wasn't the best car to learn on. There was just an absence of torque down low, so it required some significant throttle clutch interplay that she wasn't prepared for.
Go ahead, Jenny.
Oh, I was just going to say, we were fortunate in that we used a Toyota 86. So that was a really fun little car to drive. And the clutch was really forgiving, which we really thought it through as far as what car we wanted to put him in. You know, we wanted, and this is kind of the editors at Cars.com, as we were thinking through, how to teach someone to drive a stick. We wanted to go easy and gentle. And this is speaking as someone who has been in a test car and been, this is one of my most embarrassing moments and I'm about to share it, and has been in a parking garage trying to get a manual, into first gear after backing out. And I got stuck. I literally could not get it into first gear and I got so flustered and it was a really tough stick. So it's one of those things where, we've all been there. We've all had the horn honking at us and people freaking out and you're losing your cool. So we wanted to make it as easy as possible for him.
Yeah, everyone should check out that video. And yeah, Damon, good idea. Let's link to that. Now, Jennifer, you guys at Cars.com, I know you don't sit around the office thinking about what to do, but you've been especially busy lately. putting together pretty interesting stories based on data that you guys collect. Now, most of this data is from your website. Is that correct?
That's right. So, you know, you're getting to see a little bit under the hood of cars.com, and we're working with our data science team to dig into, you know, what shoppers are doing, and we're sharing that information out. And I think it's really especially interesting in regards to, you know, the pandemic and the way, life has changed, and of course the way car shopping and buying has changed as well.
Yeah, so the survey, or your article on the survey, is entitled "Survey Shows Pandemic Spurred Car Buying," which is fabulous. And this goes hand in hand with something we talked about last week, which was the chip shortage. I don't think anyone expected the pandemic to result in as many sales as it did. But not only did you guys determine that, and that people are doing lots of research into buying a car, but you found out all sorts of other stuff. Tell us about it.
We did. So, you know, we basically took a look at the user behavior from March 20th when, you know, the world started to close down through January of this year. And we found that shoppers spent 30 million hours on cars.com, and that is up 9.2% over the same time period in the previous year. So people were really doing the research, shopping, you know, trying to find that right car that fit their needs and their budget. And I thought what was really interesting, too, is we were able to take a closer look at you know, through a survey, what people's behaviors were. And urban dwellers were saying that basically 3 out of 4 urban dwellers in one of our surveys said that the pandemic did affect their decision to buy a car. You know, for those of us who live in the city, right, that's maybe not a surprise, as things like ride sharing and public transportation suddenly became less desirable with the pandemic.
Yeah, I'm interested in that. Here's a point I want to skip to because it's crazy.
Sure.
And I think that it is driven by being stir crazy. You guys, under the headline "What Car Shoppers Want and What They Spent," one of the things that you noted the most increase in interest in was a tow hitch.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
But it makes sense. If you think about all the people you know who suddenly were renting campers or, you know, heading up to their cabin on the lake, frankly, all as much as they could, right? That tow hitch meant another level of freedom. It meant, you know, not just being able to get out of the house, but frankly, being able to get out of your neck of the woods and just safely spend time somewhere else, which, you know, I think we're all happy to admit we could use a little bit of that right now.
Now, I skipped ahead to the tow hitch thing because it made me laugh, but I had another question for you. And there's a thing here, I think, reading between the lines, and it's a thing that I fear. People are researching more online, and I think that they're coming to purchase more prepared than they would have been had there not been a pandemic. But I fear people aren't test driving as much as they used to.
We have been discussing that in my department as well. And yes, I'm concerned about that, too. What's interesting is, you know, with the pandemic, dealers have really had to sort of make shifts in the way that they do business. And so I think consumers need to realize that you can still test drive a car. And if you're considering a car, you absolutely should test drive it. It's critical, right? Mm-hmm. But some dealers will bring the car out to you for an at-home test drive. You know, they'll also do things like at-home delivery when you do buy the car. So there are lots of great ways to keep yourself and your family safe during the pandemic and still shop for a car. And what I really love, of course, is over at cars.com, we have badging on for dealers that offer those services. So we've made it a lot easier to basically shop from home, which is fabulous.
Do you know if people are availing themselves of those services? Are people having cars to test drive dropped off?
You know, I can't speak as much to the cars to test drive, but I know that we saw a significant increase in the number of listings that had those badgings. So looking more just at the data side of things, we started offering that badging, I believe, in either late March or early April of 2020, and saw dealers immediately latch onto that, and a lot of our listings feature those badges, even today.
So the service is available. My concern, too, and I'm sure you guys share the same concern, is that the focus has gone away from anything having to do with dynamics of a vehicle and moved on to things like screen size. This is a little inside baseball, but when any of us read a press release from a manufacturer now, we hear about the size of the touchscreen before we hear about the engine. And if you're me, and you're old, and you used to use carburetor cleaner, that's disturbing as heck. Because that's stuff we used to care about.
What's interesting?
I think you can care about both.
Yeah.
But do people? Do people care about both? Do consumers care about both?
That's a good question, and I think that you might see a generational divide a little bit on that, with younger shoppers more interested in the tech part of the equation, and that's sort of that iPhone, cell phone generation, right? And they're used to getting sort of the latest tech, whereas perhaps shoppers who are a little more, well-established financially are still tuned in to sort of the driving experience and the importance of that and, frankly, the fun of it, too.
Go ahead, Dana.
I'm sorry, Tom. I'm going to choose to be optimistic, and I'm gonna cross my fingers and hope that the pandemic, like driving a Miata or a Toyota 86, like an accessible, not crazy overpowered, but dynamically fun, interesting, affordable car, is a great social distancing activity. it's a way to, it's enjoyable, it's engaging, and it's safe in terms of pandemic stuff. So hopefully that will there will be an uptick in the cognizance of the just sheer joy of driving. The other thing that interested me about the cars.com data is all the things the research showed would have been what my guess was. Like, yes, there's been like pent up demand. It's interesting for me to think about what are temporary conditions, how much of this data is representing temporary conditions, like the pent up demand where people couldn't buy cars, and what's just going to permanently be this way even as we move out of it. Because I don't think we're ever going back to the world as was in 2019 and before. So it'll be interesting. I think that urban car ownership will probably continue to, there'll be more consideration and more interest in car ownership among urban dwellers, even after this kind of initial tick, that's going to be kind of a standard thing moving forward.
Yeah, well,
I agree. I think that's a good prediction. Absolutely. Go ahead, Jill. Sorry.
No, I mean, I'm just going to feed off the urban car owners take the wheel. And so Jenny and I both live in the city, and I live in the Logan Square area, which is typically a very transit oriented location. And for years, there has been this garage versus street parking argument. I don't know if you get this in your neighborhood, Jenny, but like every year, right before winter, like on Nextdoor or Facebook page groups, does anybody have a garage for rent? I would like to take my car off the street. And so in my brain, I'm thinking, okay, 3 out of 4 city dwellers are now buying a car. And in Logan Square,
where are they going to put them all?
They've started building these transit-oriented developments, which maybe have 5 parking spaces for like 5,000 apartments. And I'm like, okay, and that is an exaggeration, but probably not by much.
Yeah.
But,
right.
But I'm like, yeah, where are they going to park them? And there's like zone stickers on the streets in Chicago, and there's a very limited capacity for parking. Yet you have, 75% of people are now like accelerating their car buying in an urban area. And I don't know about you, but that kind of freaks me out. Like, where are people parking?
Yeah, and there's a lot to consider, too, for those urban dwellers. You know, not just where are you parking, but also, you know, there are those sort of soft costs that we forget about sometimes that comes with car ownership. So, you know, it is a city sticker, right? It can be the trying to find a garage over the winter, or maybe just a garage all the time if you don't actually have one, insurance, right, commuting costs. So it's going to be really interesting, I think, as we continue through 2021 to see what commuting looks like later this year as, you know, more and more people are vaccinated and offices perhaps open to some capacity. Will we see all of this car buying yield increased commute times, you know, more people on the road and still shying away from public transportation? I'm not sure. This is something, you know, I'm just keeping an eye on for sure.
Well, and, you know, I mean, the other part of this urban car ownership that I find fascinating is that urban buyers are three times more likely to buy an EV. Well, you know, we've talked about EVs on this show before, and, you know, specifically, like, I had a horrible experience when I had the Mustang Mach-E and trying to charge it in the city. So, like, if three times more people are trying to buy an EV, like, now, not only where are they parking it, where are they charging it?
I think
on the EV front, you know, I would need a really long one. But on the EV front, you know, there are so... We have so many people who are interested in EVs, and so they're researching, they're doing all sort of that higher level work as they're thinking it through. So EVs do add sort of another level of complication when it comes to ownership, and that is definitely something that, you know, any car shopper needs to consider. Charging at home, you know, cars.com always recommends, you know, investigating charging at home. That needs to be your first first thought around it, because just as you pointed out, Jill, you know, the chargers around the city may not be online, or they may be blocked by snow, or any of the things that you've gone through as you've tested EVs. That could be an everyday experience. So it is a big question mark around EVs, and it's going to be interesting to see how you know, the Biden administration addresses that later this year as well.
Jenny, I wanted to get back to your survey real quick. One of the things that you guys noted was the spread of money that was spent on vehicles by your site users. Was this for new and used vehicles?
Yes, it was. Sorry, I had to rack my brain there. Yeah, so it was new and used vehicles. And I think, you know, what really is interesting to me is that we see 49% of those who purchased a car during the pandemic, they spent $40,000 or less on that vehicle. So that's we really saw an increase in interest in affordable vehicles as the pandemic went on. And I think that's understandable because, you know, if you're making an unexpected car purchase because of the reality of the pandemic, you're going to be looking for something that's not going to hit you quite as hard in the pocketbook.
You can get into segments. Early on, we spoke to a couple of dealers about the pandemic and shopping from home, topically very similar to this conversation. And one of the things that they noticed that was borne out by sales results is that there was an increased interest in subcompact crossovers during the pandemic, which I assume means that young buyers or perhaps less affluent buyers were getting in to buy the vehicles instead of using public transportation or Uber. Are you guys seeing that same increase?
Mm-hmm.
You are. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No. I mean, subcompact SUVs is a class that has just kind of exploded as far as options out there. And so, you know, you have automakers offering not just one car in that class, but maybe two, right? And it's a great way to capitalize on the SUV. It's not a craze anymore. It's just the popularity of SUVs, right? And it is an affordable way to sort of get many of the features of an SUV or crossover without the higher spend. So, yeah, it's been interesting to just kind of watch where people are putting their money right now.
Jennifer, it was a delight talking to you today. Tell us how people can find out more about this article and all the other stuff you guys do.
Well, you can come on over to cars.com, and if you are interested in learning more about the cars that we drive, keeping up with the latest car news, and also, you know, tips on car shopping, you can visit cars.com/news for more information.
Sounds good. As this is your second visit, we now permit ourselves to refer to you as a friend of the show. I hope that's okay.
I am honored. Thank you.
All right. That is Jennifer Newman, the editor-in-chief of Cars.com. She's going to be on all the time from now on. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's quiz time. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for sticking around. Hey, Jill, you do the social media thing. How do folks keep track of you?
Yeah, I do the social media thing. I am prolifically social. So you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, all with my name. So Jill Simonello, all one word. Or you can search out the hashtag car du jour. I label everything with that hashtag when I'm talking about the cars that I am driving.
Just to confuse things, I now label everything with that as well.
Good thing you were not on TikTok then, because otherwise, you know, your views would be contributing to my hashtag, and that would be bad.
Yeah, I'd feel bad about that. All right,
Damon. You should.
Damon, you just joined Auto Class Nikki. Tell us about it.
The what now?
That is the most popular social media site in Russia, Auto Class Nikki.
So this is an actual fact?
Yes.
This time, interesting. Auto Class Nikki?
Yes.
I'm going to have to look that up. No, I am not on any Russian social media site that I know of.
Oh, I will get my notes. Sorry.
Okay. But I am on Twitter at Damon Bell Likes Cars.
All right. No Auto Class Nikki for Damon. You know what time it is, guys, right?
Should be quiz time, right?
It is quiz time. I think people, your enthusiasm is palpable. This is the Consumer Guy Car Stuff Power Quiz. Today's topic is sales per dealership. All numbers are per Automotive News, where I basically bogart everything I put in a quiz. I hope you guys are ready.
Note to self, start reading Auto News regularly. Got it. Okay, go ahead.
Well, you got to get to the deep pages for these charts. Jill, okay. You go first this week. I hope you're ready.
Sure, yes.
Jill, which of the following brands sells the most vehicles per U.S. dealership? Is that Hyundai or Kia?
Oh,
it's a thinker.
It is a thinker. I think I'm gonna go with Kia because of the popularity of the Telluride, and you know, they haven't been able, to the best of my knowledge, they have not been able to keep that vehicle in stock. Whereas the counterpart, Palisade, I don't think that's sold as well. So I'm gonna go with Kia.
Interesting. All right, logic applied. Damon, which of the following brands sells the most vehicles per U.S. dealership, Hyundai or Kia?
I was thinking along the exact same lines of Jill's logic, but you're saying most vehicles per dealership. So that's slicing it up in a little bit different way because you're not mentioning how many dealers there actually are.
I have that number, which I can share with you after you answer.
Jill's logic is totally sound, but the way that you phrased the question, I have a hunch that there are more Hyundai dealers than Kia dealers. So just
to
make
it matter.
That's right.
Because it's per dealership.
Per dealership, but is the average Hyundai dealership bigger than the average Kia dealership? and hence selling more vehicles. Just to make it interesting and to get us off on not a tie, I will say Hyundai.
Interesting. Well, not going to be a tie. And Damon is correct that Hyundai has more dealerships, 825, but Kia sells more vehicles slightly than Hyundai per dealership. Kia sold 769 last year, Hyundai 753. Jill is on the board with the lead.
Right.
A point.
Damon, this question goes to you. Damon, which brand sells the most vehicles per U.S. dealership, Chevrolet or Ford?
I'm going to say Ford, just based on F-150.
For the record, both franchises have an awful lot of dealerships.
Yeah.
Jill, Chevy or Ford?
So my first instinct was to say Ford as well. I mean, neither automaker is selling passenger cars these days. And, you know, they both have a kind of halo-ish sports car, the Corvette and the Mustang. You know, Chevrolet, I feel like, has a more robust SUV lineup than Ford. But Ford also just, I'm beginning to feel like, you know, the whole the Princess Bride scene, trying to decide if, you know, the Iocane powder is in this vial or that vial.
Yeah, you're in danger of running up against the buzzer here, Joe.
I'm completely out-logicing it. I'm going to go with Ford. Okay.
You both said Ford?
Yes.
Yes.
You're both correct. Ford sold 639 vehicles per dealership last year. Chevy 589. They both have around 3,000 dealerships in the U.S.
Wow.
All right. It's 2-1 in favor of Jill. The next question goes to Jill. Jill, which brand sells the most vehicles per U.S. dealership, Honda or Toyota?
Oh, that's diabolical.
Natural enemies.
They are natural enemies. They're both incredibly reliable vehicles. You know, they both have a solid reputation, you know, for being reliable and, you know, just vehicles that will last forever. This is more of a...
Clock is ticking.
Toyota.
Toyota.
That's a guess. Pure guess. No logic.
That was a lot of thinking for no logic. Same question to you, Honda or Toyota?
I think I got to say Toyota as well. I agree.
So you both said Toyota? You are both correct.
Yeah.
All right, Jill has a 3-2 lead. The next question goes to Damon. This is anyone's game. Very exciting. Damon, which brand sells the most vehicles per U.S. dealership, Volkswagen or Volvo?
Per dealership. Oh. I got to say Volkswagen.
All right. Jill, that question goes to you. Volkswagen or Volvo? Most sales per dealership in 2020.
So, I will say the gut instinct is to say Volkswagen as well, because I feel like they're one of the top retailers in the world. They usually buy...
But remember, you're dealing with Tom, diabolical Tom here. He could be a...
I know.
All sets of security.
I know.
What about David playing defense here?
Well, he is. He's just trying to get me to not choose Volkswagen so that I'll be wrong.
No, I'm not trying to steer you in any way.
I'm not trying to do that. I'm going with Volkswagen just because you're being mean to me, Damon. I feel that.
Me?
Volkswagen. All right, Volkswagen sold 509 cars per dealership last year, Volvo 391. Volkswagen has almost more than twice as many dealerships in the U.S. as Volvo. All right, it is 4-2-3 in favor of Jill. We're coming down to the last question. Jill, you get this question first. Right. Which brand sells the most vehicles per U.S. dealership, Lexus or Mercedes-Benz?
Ooh. You could go through all the logic with Lexus being, you know, reliable and Toyota and blah, 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 and then Mercedes, though, being luxury German, but more exclusive. I think Lexus tends to be more affordable, and so I'm gonna go with Lexus.
Lexus sells more vehicles per dealership, that's what you're saying?
Yes.
All right.
Although now that you've repeated that in your diabolical way, I'm second guessing. But yes, I'm going to stick with Lexus.
All right. Damon, same question to you. Lexus or Mercedes, most sales per dealership?
Maybe this question is Tom's trick question. But yeah, I think I have to agree with Jill. I have to say Lexus over Mercedes.
You guys are both correct. Jill, you are 5 for 5 Ooh. Today. Damon is 4 for 5. Jill wins her first quiz in a long time.
For like the record, 2021.
Lexus, owning a Lexus dealership is a permission slip to print money. They sold an average of 1,132 cars per dealership. There are just 243 dealerships in the U.S. The interesting thing about that is a Mercedes, an old legacy brand, has a lot of dealerships that are probably pretty small going way back. Whereas Lexus would kick things off around 1990, kind of in the modern era, so.
Right.
All right, we're going to the bonus question because that's what we do. This question goes to Damon first. Damon, today's bonus question is based on our information found on franchise.com. I hope you're ready.
Sure.
Damon, franchise.com. Damon, which of the following... Which of the following is not a franchise opportunity currently available to Illinois investors? FlyFo, that's a mosquito and pest control company. FlyFo, F-L-Y-F-O-E. Tudor Doctor. Mosquito Mary's, that's also a mosquito and pest control franchise. Or Papa Hector's Subs and Soups.
Papa Hector's. Could you read through those options again, please?
I can. FlyFo, Tudor Doctor, Mosquito Mary's, Papa Hector's. One is fake.
Tudor what Doctor is... What is Tudor Doctor?
Is yeah, kind what of is discreet. That?
It is a tutoring center. Like Mathnasium.
Okay. Tudor Doctor.
Yeah.
That's kind of odd.
Yeah, fake or not, it's a terrible name.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Tudor Doctor.
All right. Jill, same question to you. FlyFo, Tudor Doctor, Mosquito Mary's, or Papa Hector's?
I feel like Papa Hector's could be real. That seems real to me. Mosquito Mary, that just seems mean. Like... But, I mean, Mary owns mosquitoes or owns the mosquito thing. I don't know. But that, why would you want your franchise to be Mosquito Mary?
That's too restrictive, too.
Yeah.
Are mosquitoes the only flying pest she takes care of?
And can dudes not own it?
I hear Jill getting closer to an answer here.
No. I mean, Tudor Doctor, it was my first guess, but since this is only the bonus question, I will.
Yeah, and you've already got this one in the bag, so.
I'm gonna go with Mary. I'm completely changing. I was gonna go with FlyFo, and I'm going with Mary now. Mosquito Mary.
FlyFo is an idiotic name, but that's real. Tudor Doctor is also real.
Blast.
Unlikely, Mosquito Mary's is also real. Papa Hector's Subs and Soups, not an option.
That one was the one that sounded really real.
No one gets the bonus question this week, but Jill wins her first quiz in a long time. It was close 5-4.
So the last question, the bonus question, was Tom's trademark trick question.
So anyway, next week, is it next week? Yes, Damon is writing the quiz. So Jill and I, you and I square off next week.
That's right. Start doing push-ups or pull-ups or whatever. Have a training montage. Set to Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, I can totally do that.
All right. Hey, Damon, what's going on at the CG Daily Drive blog this week?
Sorry, I just have this image in my head of both of you doing one of those speed bags. Like this.
Yeah.
Yes, the blog. We got a lot of great stuff up this week. We've got a couple test drive articles, including one on the redesigned for 2021 Hyundai Elantra SEL. What is your
opinion? Zorro slash.
That's right, the Zorro slash.
We have a drink for that.
Long ago on this show. Yes, we have a drink for that. What is your guys' thumbs up or down on the styling of this vehicle, the Elantra?
I invite people. We'll link to this on our Facebook page and in the article we'll post about this episode, but so people can check out the look of that car themselves. I like it, and I was saddened to learn that no one else does, it seems.
I like it.
You do like it.
I do like it. I like the grill. I like the big, wide, you know. I mean, what I like about it is that it's distinctive and it looks different. You know, it still bears the family resemblance to Sonata, you know, with the big grill, but it doesn't have the same lighting signature. And, you know, and the Zorro slash is starting to appear in more Hyundai vehicles. But I like the angularity of it, and I like that it's different.
It looks a little bit to me like a Braun Shaver with wheels, in a good way.
A good way.
Okay.
But you know what else it looks? It looks larger than it is. I think it conveys a sense of substance.
Yeah. Hmm.
I have to kind of give myself time because often, like as I've said before, if a new vehicle design makes me uneasy and I don't quite, not on board with it, I should give it time because that means they did their job right. If you're perfectly comfortable with it when it first comes out, then maybe they didn't aim far enough into the future. So
maybe you need some alone time with the car.
Maybe I do. I had some alone time. We had it through. We had alone time. We all had alone time because we had it through the office.
Okay.
The Zorro slash. Maybe it was just the fact that our test car was silver. And the color is more muted, but whenever I saw that really sharp sculpting on the body sides in my driveway, it just looked like a big dent to me, you know? Like it was backed into some really sharp object or something. So well, check back with me in a year from now. We'll revisit.
All right, I'm making a note. Check back with Damon. Yes.
Put it on the calendar.
And then just real quick, we have an article about the 2021 Dodge Durango SRT 392, six cool things about that. That Durango was refreshed for 2021 with some really slick updates.
I love that color. I love that color.
Yeah, F8 green. Actually, we can talk to our guest next week about that. That'll be
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And we've got a quick spin article on the 2021 Volkswagen Atlas Base Camp, which is near and dear to my heart because it's an interesting dealer installed accessory appearance package, and it's got wheels by my favorite aftermarket wheel manufacturer, which is 1552. They're not for everyone's taste, but I think it's super cool. And then Tom, you go ahead.
A lot of people have a favorite aftermarket wheel supplier, so
I have several. I'm weird that way.
I can't name one. Is BBS still a thing? I know. Otherwise, I can't.
I think BBS went. I think BBS went bankrupt recently.
Did they? Because I thought that I they seen their wheels on something recently.
Maybe they've restructured. Yeah, but I think BBS is significantly down off their peak that I would assume to be in the 80s. But
all right.
Yes, and then finally, Tom, you did an article on the currently available vehicles with three-cylinder engines.
Yeah. Yeah, there are more of those than people think.
Yes, and one of those is what we talked about last week, the Bronco Sport. The base engine in a Bronco Sport is a three-cylinder.
And Car and Driver is reporting now that the Nissan Rogue will be available in 2021 with a three-cylinder base engine. That hasn't confirmed. I've only read about that through Car and Driver, though the EPA already has fuel economy numbers for that engine. So three-cylinder engines, they're sneaking up on us.
Yeah.
All right. Check out all the stuff we do at consumerguide.com. If you want to check out our blog, just click on the blog tab and you can see all the articles we just talked about. All right. You know what we did?
We ran out of time.
We did, without stalling or anything. Well, Jill stalled a lot before answering questions, but other than that, but we didn't do that much stalling. All right. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. Special thanks to our guest, Jennifer Newman of Cars.com. Check out her stuff at cars.com/news. Thanks, as always, to Jill and Damon. A big air hug to producer Lady B and the good folks here at WCPT AM 820 in Chicago. A shout out to my radio mentor, Steve and Johnny. You guys are the best. Hey, let's talk more about cars again next week.